Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
The center of the galaxy. This is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report.
Invasion of Geonosis.
That is great. I would listen to your entire audiobook where you just sort of make close to noises for the sounds of specific episodes.
There you go.
Great drums of war from the mouth of Ken Nabstock. I am Joseph Scrimshaw. We are here to discuss two great episodes of the Clone Wars. We are into season two. We're going to be discussing season two, episode five, Landing at Point Rain. It is written by Brian Larson and directed by Brian Callen O'Connell. And then season two, episode six, Weapons Factory. This one is also written by Brian Larson, and it is directed by Giancarlo Volpe. It's great to be going through these episodes and seeing some of these names pop up again and again. And as you do such a good job of reminding us all the time, Ken, of just really paying attention to what a team there was working on the Clone Wars.
Mm. I feel like I'm an annoying school marm, but yes, no, you're right. No, you're right.
You're right. I mean, it's partially just, you know, human brains can only take in so much, but we tend to it, when we discuss entertainment, lean toward the big names that we know. And then, you know, seeing specific names crop up again and again, it is just such a good reminder of like, these people were really in the trenches making these episodes and all this great Star Wars storytelling as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and it's certainly not a swipe at Filoni. And I believe Filoni would be the first to say, look at all these wonderful people that made it. It's just a cult of personality. Celebrity culture sometimes takes over. And if you're a knowledgeable Star Wars guy in a cowboy hat, you're going to get remembered. And if you're in all the behind the scenes featurettes, you're going to get remembered. And it's nothing against him. But wonderful team, especially early seasons, just a lot of great names working on this stuff. So I love that you highlight who wrote and directed them.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of this is obviously flowing from Lucas and his young apprentice at the time, Dave Filoni. Now Dave Filoni has become a master, but many great people working with them as well. Here's my summary of these two episodes. Are you ready, Ken?
Yes, sir.
The war rages on. After Padme's espionage mission revealed Poggle the Lesser's massive new droid foundry, the Jedi and the Republic are determined to retake the separatist planet Geonosis. Anakin Skywalker, Ahsoka Tano, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Ki-Adi Mundi devise a daring three-pronged attack to destroy the shield generator that is protecting the foundry. Oh no, but they face heavy opposition from the Geonosians, and they said their entire plan out loud in front of Chancellor Palpatine, and it really seems like he just straight up told the Geonosians. Most of their forces are therefore shot down, but using a combination of patience, intuition, and direct assault, the Jedi heroes take down the generator. Wounded, Obi-Wan and Ki-Adi depart. Anakin and Ahsoka are then joined by Luminara Onduli and Barriss Offee, who have a daring plan to sneak the Padawans through the catacombs underneath the foundry and plant explosives. The Padawans succeed, but are buried alive in the rubble. Anakin expresses both fear of losing his Padawan and great belief in her abilities. Luminara expresses the importance of accepting loss. In between this philosophical debate, the Padawans are actually rescued. But what horrors await them next? Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, well done. The reason I just love your summaries for a lot of reasons, but a lot of times in watching these episodes, I you know, taking notes or knowing, you know, here's what we might discuss. I can kind of narrow focus on themes or a scene that makes me think, oh, this episode is about this. And sometimes little context plot details kind of escape me. I love the highlight of they say all the plans to Palpatine.
Yeah, it's a great little thread. We can talk about it more when we're looking at our sort of Justice of the Jedi, but it isn't, they don't put a spotlight on it, but that's what is actually motivating the plot, the events that happen.
It's a great pull. Great stuff.
Excellent. Let's dive into your overall reaction. Did you love it, like it, struggle with these two episodes? Where were you at?
Oh man, this is a big win. This is a big win here. I love it. And I'll start here. This is clearly just a very D-Day style invasion. And it's interesting. We talk about who's on the show, who's creating the show, and we cannot forget George. Again, I always slip into those featurettes that are on the older StarWars.com articles. Kristen Baver puts out great stuff. I can't recommend enough. Y'all check them out. There's always some little featurettes, and there was a real funny one with Filoni talking about, we can talk about later, about the shapes Jedi cut in walls and how they learned that and everything. Really, actually pretty funny. But the little making of here. George said, I want this episode like a D-Day style invasion, you know, and then they made it. And halfway, as they were making the episode, with time running out, George comes in and goes, this isn't hitting. This is not good. Start over.
Wow.
And what the episode, particularly the first one, they really up against the wall had to really do this. And Dave gives credit, like the team just did it. And I kind of come in, he even joked, I'm here to put you back on schedule. I'm the Vader of it all here a little bit, inside of the name of Moff Gerard, and even the Emperor George kind of coming in, blowing it all up there. Really fascinating. And especially to see that. And then to see just have this episode. And I just love it. It's an important battle in the Clone War. This return to Geonosis, which is a return to a great location. And this is kind of one of those arcs that I think fans can remember loving. And so it kind of has this, like follow me, like a poster child vibe for the series, like Clone Wars. Oh yeah. Fighting cool Star Wars action, which is important, which is why you and I always discuss what's our favorite action moments in the Clone Wars. Cause it's so key to the, George, you know, cut up even more World War II footage for this episode. Make it like this. He did that much like he did in the original, you know, Star Wars. So all that to say, Joseph, I really loved it. I never want to underestimate the importance of war in Star Wars. So I love here for that. But I'm interested and was interested to see how I personally, Ken Napsack, would look at this episode now, looking at it with a little more thoroughly than I did before, and found this episode, these episodes even more rewarding with that kind of stuff. So, yeah, overall, loved it and love diving in.
That is so great. I'm glad you watched those vignettes. I try to remember to watch them, but sometimes I drop the ball on watching them myself. So I love hearing the fresh info from you live as we record on those featurettes. Yeah, I'm with you in really loving this episode or this arc. And we broke it up. It's this four-episode arc that kind of is this great serialized storytelling. Sometimes I bang on about wanting a little bit more vibe of cliffhanger. And it isn't, you know, the literal cliffhanger of like, and now they're trapped and what will happen next? Tune in next week. It never has that. But it's really got this vibe of serialized storytelling of here's the first episode in this. They try to take down the shield generator. Then the next episode, they're trying to destroy the actual foundry. And then the two episodes after this, we'll get into the great Star Wars zombie movie that spreads out of all of this and continues the story in lots of different ways. So I love the serialized storytelling. These two separate episodes kind of feel like an arc, but they are also part of this longer Geonosian arc. But the big thing for me, as you said, these are war, big capital letters, three exclamation points. These are war episodes. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's so important because it is absolutely, as a viewer, it is, you know, thrilling and shocking and scary and all these great things that are why humans watch conflict, right? That they're because they, you know, they're both a safe way to view these things and think about these things and to be thrilled by these things. But it's also very Star Wars about the way it is dealing with war, because I feel like what it sounds like that George successfully got from this great team of creators is to really make you feel the horror of war. Like,
yeah,
you can just sit and watch this and it's thrilling because it's Star Wars action, but it is really horrible, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like, for me, when we dive into it, when we get into the themes, I can really enjoy the thrilling, shocking, horrible war because I feel like these episodes are offering ideas of how to cope with war, with loss and chaos and fear. And that's what makes it really powerful on that next level beyond just the sort of the visceral horror of war. And I really liked that these have a lot of different characters, but these are Anakin and Ahsoka episodes. They're about their unconventional relationship. And is that, what are the benefits of that? What are the downfalls of that? Is it okay? And we get to kind of see the Anakin and Ahsoka relationship, not only through their actions, but I love these episodes where we see their actions through the point of view of other Jedi, of Ki-Adi Mundi and Luminara and Barriss and all that. And then, so I feel like it's an important couple episodes in continuing to build the Anakin and Ahsoka relationship. And my final kind of overall thing that I just love is this this place, this planet, this aesthetic of Geonosis, of the Geonosians with their different technology, their different way of combat, their different vehicles. There's always, even in Attack of the Clones, there's this strong element of horror to the Geonosians, which is going to be turned to 11 in the next two episodes that we're going to discuss. But even in this episode, it's got this great contrast of the Jedi have their way of fighting. The clones are pretty traditional military. And then the Geonosians are just like, we're going to do a bunch of weird things you can't anticipate because we're just weird, creepy Geonosian, you know, insect characters.
Oh, man. Yeah, right there. I can't wait to dive into themes here because we're definitely picking up the same things that this episode's put down. And say one fine big overall thing. I think it's so fun, which is weird because it's bittersweet because it ends badly for these two characters. But Anakin, Ahsoka, and their relationship, what you can learn, and just the real simple, not subtle lessons that are put out there about attachment and loss and what it all means, they continue to kind of just jump out at me more like a Geonosian in a cave or a catacomb, more now on this rewatch. And been just a lot of fun just watching their relationship, bittersweet as it is. But
absolutely. Fun. Absolutely. This is, yeah, it, this is, these episodes are like, to me, a happy moment on a march to tragedy, right? Because they they do really build the trust between Anakin and Ahsoka.
Some of that food in that Titanic was great.
I understand that music the band played was great. All right, let's talk about the morals of the episodes. The first episode has the on-screen moral of believe in yourself or no one else will. And then the second episode has no gift is more precious than trust. How did these grab you? Did you like those? Did one of them speak to you more than the other?
Yeah, love them. I'm going to try really hard to not just force the conversation into the themes out of the morals, even though sometimes it's a big mishmash. I feel sometimes I do, like, here's the morals, actually the theme. Now I love both of them. And it's so funny since you and I have been doing these Clone Wars reports, especially early on, I was a lot of like, Coach Ken has a coaching point out of this episode. That's suddenly returned tenfold in this episode because it literally is an episode about coaching.
I was feeling that watching this. I was like, oh man, these are great Coach Ken episodes. He's coming out with the Little League on this one because he should.
Ken's got his baseball clipboard, is ready to teach some kids. But anyways, the believe in yourself or no one else will. Here's what I interpret it this way. Is knowing yourself in the face of overwhelming odds and situations is what's important here. And that's how I interpreted this kind of belief. It is, we're going to discuss that just there's a lot of chaos and how well you know yourself and know what you're capable of and know what you've trained for is actually just in you. And you can connect to that with all the noise around you is going to perhaps lead to your very survival or going to lead to success, not just in war, but the office. All right. It's all kind of there. And I really that resonated with me. I love that idea of belief in yourself isn't just looking in the mirror, giving yourself a wink and saying, I got this, which, by the way, is valuable as well. Or I look good before I head to this birthday party. All valuable things about believing in yourself and having confidence. But what this episode was trying to communicate was this idea of like, a lot of times no one else has time to give you. It's not like this episode, there's a little bit of Anakin kind of doubting or struggling with Ahsoka, but like Obi-Wan doesn't have time to believe in you. He has to hope you believe in yourself or he might die.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what spoke to me. And the trust one, pretty, you know, trust breeds confidence to me. Confidence can breed success for everyone and all that kind of stuff. But that one, 205, episode 205, that really got me.
Yeah, I think that was powerful because episode 205 is a little bit more all action all the time. And mm-hmm. the ideas in it are very much based on the actions as much as there is as they are in the dialogue. But I almost feel like they're a little bit more in the action. And it feels to me like exactly what you're saying of like all these different characters are going into a chaotic situation that they cannot entirely control. Mm-hmm. And they have to rely on their own strengths to get them through this. And for me, it reminds me of like times in life where, you know, there isn't a right way. It is the individual's way to get through the problem. Like, you know, I think of creative groups I've worked with where sometimes myself or somebody else will have to say to me of like, I can't explain to you why this choice is the right one. I just have the instinct. I know it's right for me. I know this will work for me. And if I can just follow my path, then this particular part of the creative problem will be solved and it will work for the audience. And in it, not to compare doing a live theater to actual armed conflict, but that to me is what it felt like of like the Jedi in this story know what they are capable of. They know how they can navigate through the chaos and they need that trust from one another to follow their own way and get through it. And the second one to me is like, yeah, it's great. It's strong, but it does feel like it is really underlining the story between Anakin and Ahsoka and a lot of morals in Clone Wars about trust, as there should be, because trust is a big, important thing. But that one does feel to me a little bit more straightforward of no gift is more precious than trust.
Yeah, and but a gift, great if you receive it, but really more important to give it. That's where I think the episode comes down on is giving it is a great gift to give. So
yeah. Maybe there's a moral at some point in the Clone Wars about re-gifting trust, and that one will be more complicated. But this one's nice and crystal clear. Well said. Let's dive into the big picture ideas. I had a couple ideas about kind of the way I thought through them and broke them down, but I think we're going similar places. So why don't you jump in with what are you thinking? How did the big picture ideas make sense to you as you thought through them all?
Yeah. I'll start with the smaller one. It's not smaller in terms of, you know, a lot of stuff going on this episode, but you touched on it, and I think it's there. It's, we got the horrors of war met with the games of Anakin and Ahsoka, kind of this Gimli and Legolas-inspired counting of kills. And to me, that's a little bit of a theme of mental survival in the face of things you probably maybe can't comprehend. And the button of Ki-Adi-Mundi kind of playing the game is funny, especially with the, you know, Obi-Wan, who has just been, you know, put in a tough spot. Obi-Wan's not feeling good here. I want a justice for Obi-Wan again. Of just like, he's not being dour. He's like, you all, I almost died, and you're counting kills like it's a fun game. But it that's part of the theme too, an underlying theme in the episode of just like how, in the face of just trauma or overwhelming odds or things, like how do you process it? And there's not necessarily a right answer, but this is how they did and how they chose to, and I kind of like that as a minor theme.
Yeah, I love that. I kind of grouped a bunch of thoughts under the big picture umbrella theme of coping with war, and that's the idea that really, in that the first episode's arc, that made me really look at everything from that perspective, or most everything from that perspective. And it's so great because it could just come off as, you know, there's some episodes of Clone Wars where Anakin and Ahsoka kind of bicker or banter, or, you know, Obi-Wan and Anakin kind of bicker and banter. And it sometimes it's just like fun and flavor. Other times it's real meaningful. And this just felt so meaningful because it feels like Anakin and everybody else is really concerned. This is an extremely difficult and important battle. They're, you know, having some losses already in the war. They're having to retake this place. You know, the stakes are really high. And then here come in Anakin and Ahsoka joking around. And the episode really kind of successfully raises that question of like, is that appropriate? Why are they doing that? And then it answers it so beautifully and so well with that end of Obi-Wan saying, I'll never understand how you can simplify these battles into some kind of game. Mm-hmm. And as you said, Ki-Adi-Mundi coming in with kind of that answer to Obi-Wan's question of saying 65, that was how many I get. What do I win? And then I love when Anakin says, oh, you win my respect. And Ki-Adi-Mundi's got that real small, oh. And that's great to me for a couple of reasons. One, because it is this great thing of Ki-Adi-Mundi. Well, I guess the big picture thing of it is Ki-Adi-Mundi seeing where Anakin and Ahsoka are coming from, right? Anakin and Ahsoka are presented again and again in these episodes and throughout the Clone Wars is unconventional.
Yeah,
and the other Jedi are always concerned about it. And this is one of those great moments of Ki-Adi-Mundi going like, oh, I get why you do this. It's to help cope and to help give you a sense of control. But then even within that, Ki-Adi-Mundi like honestly thinks like, what, you're going to get a basket of Jogan fruit? What? You thought there was an actual gift? And then you get that beat of respect from Obi-Wan of saying, yeah, mm-hmm. that's Anakin's respect is a gift that he rarely bestows. It's just great kind of Obi-Wan poking, but also I feel like an admission from Obi-Wan of like, okay, I can see it. You're using a little bit of humor and a little bit of humanity. Give yourself a sense of control to cope with the chaos.
Love it. And it's a great Ki-Adi moment because this is the what about the droid attack on the Wookiees? This is the Dooku is a great guy. Don't you worry about it. Jedi, you know, and we can poke fun at it. But to see where it just kind of comes from this real, not naive, but you know what I mean? Just like this really just logical, probably doesn't know how to tell a joke type of guy. It all kind of made sense to me in this moment of him just like, oh, I shall play too. What do I win for this contest?
Yeah, it's great. I love it. What's the next idea that you have?
Well, it goes to actually to Ki-Adi-Mundi at one point says, there's no such thing as luck. And I just built off that. And it's a great kind of, you know, we've heard that before in Star Wars and all those kind of things. But I tied it back to the stated moral and what we discussed up there. Belief in yourself in the face of chaos that might lead to survival, success, and all those kind of things. But, you know, we got no planning or all the planning you can have, all the training, any skills you can rest back on, you know, that you think can get you through the chaos, go out the window. And it's focus, which Jedi need focus, and it's the belief in yourself in the moment that spoke to me here. The mission is part of the Jedi mandate to, quote, restore order to the galaxy. There is literally no order in this episode. It's chaos. And the real world, Coach Ken Thing, this is actually Director Ken Thing back in my old public safety days. You know, we'd have 220-page manuals on what to do in an earthquake. And you'd have to study and train. And I wrote a lot of them, this and that. And I would, in my training sessions, sessions hold up the folder, the binder, and say, none of this matters when it hits. That earthquake hits, and it's sizable, and we have to react as a public safety team. None of these pages will matter to you. It's you knowing what to do in the situation, being familiar with them and taking everything you can from it. But in that moment, it's you that's going to get. And I saw this episode and was just like, this is an emergency response plan binder being tossed out the window the moment they go into onto Geonosis. And that was kind of that. So again, going to the theme of that belief, it isn't just a wink in the mirror. Like I said, it is knowing and pulling through in the face of overwhelming odds, the overwhelming odds that we all face every day in life, which is why it connected from war in space to you at your desk.
Yeah, no, that makes big sense to me. And is one of the things that I liked in these episodes is we've got all of these moments where I think that we are seeing Anakin and Ahsoka through other characters' eyes, but partially what we're seeing is different Jedi sort of defined by their tactics of how are they getting through this chaos and this horror. And I think in particular in that first episode, you pulled out that great quote of there is no such thing as luck. It's a familiar Jedi refrain, but this is, you know, that has practical implications when the plan falls apart and you still need to get from point A to point B to try to pull the plan back together. And right. I love that there's that moment where we get to see that Anakin and Ahsoka generally lean on, you know, blunt, straightforward attack, improvisation, all that. It's going to come up more in the episode with Luminara and Barriss. But Ki-Adi Mundi is just like, I will just follow my instincts. Let's go into this horror cave.
Yeah.
Because I just, you know, that's how I get through is I follow my instinct. And like that moment for me is really goes back to that moral of believing yourself or no one else will, of like Anakin and Ahsoka have their own way to get through this. And right. another Jedi might have their a different way. But Ki-Adi Mundi is about trusting his instincts. He's about like, yes, I've read the Jedi manual and now it is a part of me. It's somewhere deep in my soul and I don't need to remember which chapter or which tab. It's internalized. I think that's really powerful of seeing a different way and a different approach. And I think Obi-Wan doesn't get to have a lot of definition because he mostly just gets wounded, poor Obi-Wan. But even within that, we see that he's patient and observant, that he is letting his clones do their work, protecting him while he's wounded. In that, you know, great circular caravan. And he's just like, hey, I did the plan as best as I could. I'm here at the rendezvous point. The other Jedi should be here. Patience and observance of what's going on. You know, so even though it's not a lot of Obi-Wan, there is still a little bit of his, how does he get through this?
Yeah, yeah. I like that. I can always rely on you to give some good Obi-Wan.
Even when there's not a ton to work with in this episode. Yeah. But there is some great Obi-Wan stuff.
Yeah.
Another big idea for me under the general umbrella of coping with war is I feel like these big Star Wars ideas of loss track through both episodes. I thought it was really great to have a kind of a different flavor of Anakin wrestling with loss when there's that great moment where he gets angry about Obi-Wan not being there and has that line of great. The one time actually ask Obi-Wan for help, he's nowhere to be found. And at first, you're like, damn, Anakin. And then Ahsoka kind of comes in with her worry and fear for Obi-Wan. And Anakin's just basically like, we can't think about him or we're not going to be able to move forward. So
yeah,
we know that Anakin cares about Obi-Wan, but this is such a great moment for me because it is depicting Anakin coping with loss in a different way. Because we see him coping with the fear of loss by just getting very, you know, assertive and aggressive of, you know, I'm going to do anything possible. There's no way I'm going to lose them. I won't allow it. That even happens later in this arc. But in this moment, it's Anakin has a different relationship to Obi-Wan. So he expresses his fear of losing Obi-Wan by blaming Obi-Wan for going off and dying.
Oh man, I have that gut reaction sometimes too. It's an important thing, to not follow Anakin down that path. Yeah, where sometimes if something goes wrong, I might lash out at the person who had nothing to do with it, but was, you know, it was an accident, or, oh my God, or the dog got off the leash and I, what did you do that for? As opposed to dealing with the dog is off the leash.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I know nobody meant to do that. Yeah. And then obviously there at the end of that second episode, we get some more very traditional at this point in the Star Wars story, Anakin's inability to accept loss, with him being unwilling to leave Ahsoka behind, Anakin being upset that Luminara seems to very quickly be able to accept Varys' death. Not, as Luminara herself says, not just be okay with it, she will mourn, but she will also celebrate, but it is very emotionally detached in comparison to Anakin. And then Luminara has that very important line of, when the time comes, I am prepared to let my student go. Can you say the same? And I love highlighting that line, which I'm sure you did as well. But it's just, when you, there's so many different ways to look at the Clone Wars series, and you can look at it as the story of how Ahsoka Tano almost helped keep Anakin on the side of the light. And the first, the movie that starts this off, well, not chronologically, but you know what I mean. Yeah. The very early movie that introduces us to Ahsoka, that's really Yoda's explanation, right? Of, I think Yoda basically says, like, I think Anakin will actually be a really good teacher, and it'll be really helpful for him to pass on what he's learned. It'll be helpful for him to learn to be concerned about somebody else. But the real test is, can he let her go? So to have that really important arc that comes up again in season 7, of course, at the end, it's really important to have a sort of pillars along the way in the story for it, that to be reinforced, as that is one of the central questions of the Clone Wars.
Yeah. This idea of trust is this gift to give. It also ties into the episode we just talked about last week with the stuff with Padme to me. And it's this idea of trust is giving. Trust is a way of letting go, right? It's a way of just, I have to trust that you will do this and you will come back safe and unharmed, or the job will get done. I cannot control this. I cannot control you in this matter. It's I got to give it all to you. And for him to, there's some real great stuff up top of Ahsoka just being like, you don't trust me. And it's clear that it's not his belief in her skills. It's just, you know, to let her go, to let her do it. I love how it all flows in the big Anakin lessons, like you're saying here. It's really powerful stuff. And I wonder, I even ask you here, and it's kind of part of the larger kind of Star Wars story, but, you know, at the end of this, you know, Anakin wins in a way. Mm-hmm. He saves the day. And it's not a false win in that moment. He saves Barriss and Ahsoka, but it's a false win maybe in his mind for the big picture of, see, you don't let go. You know, and it's like, and it's like, well, yeah, you're right. But that, think of the conversation right before that, and you know, and again, in the moment, you don't know he doesn't know where he's going to end up, but you can see it slip, and you can see one of these moments where he's probably looking back and talking or thinking about what Palpatine's saying and going, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I can't let Padme go. That's not good. I've not done that in the past, and it's turned out real well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is such a great part of the big Star Wars question that I think is always present but affects Anakin so much, is that question of, are attachments a strength or a weakness? And I think this episode has great nuance on that question, because I think this is an example where attachment was a strength, and the Jedi don't normally see it that way. And Luminara is right to question him about the future. But in this moment, Anakin isn't, you know, he's not attacking anyone over attachment. Like we see him at several points in the Clone Wars, we'll see him use excessive violence, or, you know, literally, you know, beat people up over jealousy with Padme. This is so portrayed in this episode that, to me, that Luminara is being too emotionally cold, in that she doesn't have a true emotional attachment with Barriss, that it's much more of a master student. I give you your homework. Did you do a good job? You know, I'll give you an A or an F. And what makes Anakin and Ahsoka's relationship powerful and special, and what we get to see, I think, through the other Jedi's eyes, is that it is a very deep, loving relationship. And in Anakin's insistence to not let her go, the episode ends on the beat of their trust is a strength that Anakin, that here's the actual, exchange is Ahsoka says, I knew you'd come looking for me. And Anakin says, I never doubted you for a second. And Luminara is nice about it and says, indeed, your master never lost faith in you.
Right.
You know, and it completes the little arc in this episode about Anakin starts by interrupting Ahsoka, not because he doesn't believe in her skills, but because he's afraid that something might go wrong. He's trying to control the situation, as he always does. But then when Ahsoka truly gets into trouble and he looks into his heart, it's not just that he can't bear to lose her. It's that he knows how resourceful she is. And she knows how loyal and kind he is. And it's that appreciation of one another that allows them to, you know, rescue, to have Ahsoka and Barriss be rescued. So I kind of feel like this is a moment where an episode that is saying, look, the Jedi have a right to be concerned about fear and attachment, but sometimes, like Luminara and Barriss, they can take that too far and they can get cold and removed. And sometimes love and trust and faith and loyalty are good things, and they don't need to be feared just because they might lead to darkness.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love what you're saying. Standing up in class and applauding, because remember we were talking about last week of this idea. I really look at Padme and Anakin and their relationship, forbid as it was, but they weren't given the chance to deal with any real problems because it was all secret and not allowed and blah, 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 and it just spills out of things. So what you say, and I know we've talked about this before, about this idea of attachment, which compassion, all in and of itself, even anger, not unnatural and not necessarily wrong. It's the choices that you make after those. It's pretty powerful. And to what you just said of Luminara and Barriss is an example of, it's definitely preparation versus, outside the lines. That's the basic coaching lessons there. But the idea of just like, look, you can withhold of that plan until your death. Pretty powerful stuff there. So, yeah, I love discussing it. I'm not take the conversation into a hodgepodge world.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. I think it is just such a great and lovely moment. And again, I think it's having respect for like nuance as well, because it isn't like other moments for Anakin where the battle, he's really needed in the battle somewhere else. And he's turning his back on a bigger, greater good. Like, you know, the moment from Attack of the Clones where he wants the ship to be put down and Obi-Wan is saying, like, I need you to take Dooku, and this isn't what Padme would want. Like, it's not one of those moments. It's just faith that she could have survived. And Luminara's like, maybe, but probably not. I love what you were saying. This is the last big thing that I wanted to talk about, this idea of the different Jedi being defined by their tactics. I loved how much that comes to a head in the second episode, of that Anakin and Ahsoka are presented in almost a comic way of we see them bickering, and Luminara says to Barriss, like, oh, they're at it again. Let's just say they have a penchant for playing loose with regulations and rules of command. And it is, the contrast is almost comedic that Anakin and Ahsoka are like, great, we've got a plan. There's a bridge. We're going to run across it and kick everybody's ass. It's so blunt and direct. And then Luminara is like, instead, what if we went underground through a twisty maze that we have rigidly memorized? The contrast between their literal battle plans is like almost so sharp it's funny.
Yeah, well, and Luminara, who I think is a great Jedi, by the way, though has shown that she's made some mistakes. Looking even at season 7, it's so interesting she's involved, but I love the moment where she's like, 200 miles of catacombs and tunnels, which I've had Barriss memorize.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Wow. And look what happens to Barriss. Look what happens to Barriss.
Mm-hmm.
The groundwork's here.
Yeah. This contrast, it gets set up and then it gets played out by the specific actions. And, you know, there's all this stuff about the loss and the trust. But there's this specific contrast between this set of master and apprentice that is about, I think, being rigid versus being flexible. I think it is about the balance between being professional, doing your homework, being prepared versus that stuff's all great. You need that, but you need to have some flexibility. You need to have some ability to improvise. And that is so what's shown is like, yep, Anakin and Ahsoka can be, really blunt, really direct, really messy in their style of combat and communication, but they're really creative and capable of improvisation, and it saves the day. And Luminara and Barriss are very rigid, very specific. They have a plan that they've pre-memorized. That's it. And they have a hard time adjusting when the plan goes wrong, you know? And we see that moment where Barriss is directing Ahsoka through the tunnels, and they realize that they're filled with sleepy Geonosians, beautiful and terrifying. And she and Ahsoka's like, maybe we should try going a different way. And Barriss is like, no, we have to go the way I've memorized. Period. Like, there's no room for improvisation. Anakin improvises when he draws those super tanks under the bridge, and Luminaire's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm being in the moment and looking at the situation and changing my plan, and it works. And even though Ahsoka, gets knocked around once they're in the foundry trying to take it out, and, Barriss does the smart and, adjusting to the situation move of jumping into the tank and taking it over, it's still Ahsoka who thinks of using the tank, And Barriss is focusing like, well, what are we going to do? The bombs are gone. That was the plan, period. And Ahsoka's like, we're sitting in a tank. And then even at the end there, it's not just that trust, that loyalty. Ahsoka shows again an ability to improvise that she learned from her master when she gets that cell battery, and she does this trick that she learned from her techie master that she knows will reach him. They're improvising and they're connecting, and in a way that Luminara and Barriss can't when they're just focused on precision.
It's so the big picture stuff of the Jedi Order at this time on display in this episode. No direction bad in and of itself, but just you can see it. Man, I'm listening to you talk, just like going, you could see the stuff in Revenge of the Sith. You can see what happens with Barriss. You see it all here on display in this episode, and you gotta wonder if George was kind of like, you guys are all great. The fighting's wonderful. Give me this stuff, because this is what I'm trying to tell you all. I love it. And this is, so the featurette, this is a great time to jump it in here. The one of it's a funny kind of almost a wink and nod conversation, but Dave Filoni's talking about how Barriss, who is a doesn't really know what to do without the plan type of person, cuts the wall in a perfect rectangle. And it is, angled, it's perfect. And he goes off into a funny conversation about, I wonder how they train that, because Ahsoka does the circle. We've seen the circle. Qui-Gon does the circle. Everyone does a circle. Barriss does this hospital square sheet folded rectangle.
90 degree angles.
Yes. And you're a graphic design guy. And it's like, and Filoni's just in this featurette, again, recommend you all check it out, of just like, like, where did she learn that? And what does it mean? And clearly it means a lot. And I love little choices like that, and how that's, someone who's master, who I'm saying is a mean, bad, master, but it's just like, study all 200 miles of those catacombs, this and that, cut perfect angles, stay within that box. You can see it all on display there. And I just love that.
Yeah. And does that style of teaching allow Luminara a little bit more emotional distance? Because like what she's saying isn't bad, of like, well, if I were to lose Barriss, I would of course mourn her. I would be sad, but then I would also celebrate her. And like a lot of the things that we talk about of, accepting loss and letting go, and the lesson that Yoda is trying to give Anakin in Revenge of the Sith, that stuff is all good. But it does feel like it is lacking emotion. And I feel like, what this is one of these episodes to me that is about, the idea of balance comes up a lot in Star Wars, and it's not just what is the balance of the Force. I think that is often the criticism of the Jedi, of, look, you need to practice. You need precision. You need to go to your example. You need to memorize that emergency preparedness manual. But you also need to be able to question it. And you also need to be able to throw it out the moment it doesn't help you anymore. And I think a lot of times the story of the Jedi's failure in this era is they tilted way, way, way to that rigid side. Mm-hmm. We've got this because it's in the handbook. And I think this is one of those episodes that's saying, like, but you need creativity. You need improvisation. You need what Anakin and Ahsoka can offer. Yes, it can be dangerous, and we'll cover that too. But you also, this is an episode to me about balance between the rigid and the organic.
This episode can be summed up by page turners. They were not.
Yes. Nice. Any other themes from this episode or any other kind of big picture, the way they reflect the larger story perspective of Star Wars?
I'm going to roll through a little bit of, by the way, the way you and I approach notes is often a good mix. We have notes, let's roll through. We talked about, I want to talk about the end result with Anakin. We talked about Ahsoka. It's kind of this big, the big theme idea that Ahsoka's worried about Anakin. Tells her no place to worry. That great scene about the Obi-Wan and Anakin being upset at Obi-Wan, but also just kind of it's about that Jedi focus. We have to talk about Jedi need focus. Focus determines reality. Concentrating on the here and now. Yoda and his seagulls, stop it, please, Kane, hitting Luke on the head is all about that. And to me, it's that self belief. It all funnels back into self belief for success under duress. Which is, they're all tools for battling fear. And fear is something that's prevalent. It's a great enemy for the Jedi. We're starting to see that in High Republic stuff of everything. So I love that little stuff. And that kind of reflects kind of this bigger Star Wars thing. But also on a base level here, and you can feel free to follow up on that train of thought as I just barf all over the bridge here trying to take out the tanks. Just on a larger story perspective of the actual war, because this is a war episode, the opening Tom Kane newsreel, you always are great to point out, Joseph, that check that. It's setting some context. It's setting some tone and giving valuable bits of information. The separatists are gaining confidence. They are not just in the outer rims struggling to gain a foothold. They are winning and they're gaining confidence. And that ties to me back to what you brought up about Palpatine going, oh, let me take some notes here. All right. I'll just send that to Poggle right now.
Yeah. Those are two great threads. I will follow up on both. But the first one, I think you're really right to pull out that thread of control is, much like attachment control, can be a strength or a weakness. And that's one of Yoda's direct lines to Luke, right? Control, you must learn control. And then Luke goes on to learn the absolute hell out of control. And it becomes, over time, rigid and a weakness. And that's one of my favorite details of Luke's appearance in The Mandalorian, where he's just all about training, that Grogu won't be safe until he's trained. And, by the time we catch up with him in Last Jedi, he is just was certain that he could train Ben Solo, and Yoda eventually has to come back again and say, "Oh, yep, you learned mastery. You learned it real well, maybe a little too well. Throw out the handbook. Improvise." And then he does in the most great, amazing way on Crait. So love that thread. Great to pick up on. For following the big picture of the war, this was so great because it made it clear that the Jedi and the Republic are spread thin, and planets that they kind of had on lockdown were starting to pop back up again. So it's starting to paint that picture that the war went from, okay, they're trying to control the Outer Rim, so we're going to go defend planets on the Outer Rim. Okay, we did okay at some of those. We lost some of those. Now the planets that we had locked down other places in the galaxy are falling apart. So it's real one step forward, two steps back. And I love that Obi-Wan directly has this line of, what I worry about is the way this war seems to be drawing out with no end in sight. And he is stroking his beard, painfully close to the truth. That is just one of those little lines that can just go like, that's a good thing. Totally understandable thing for Obi-Wan to say. But it is continuing this story of the Jedi jump into this war going, well, we don't want a war, but we also don't want to assert control over the legitimate government. And the vote didn't go the way we wanted. They raised an army. We're being attacked by these separatists. we need to defend the galaxy and let's end this war real fast. And then the war won't end. And then pretty soon they're just mired in being a cycle of conflict rather than this defense that can end it quickly. And to see that come up right away in the second season, that already there's lots of discussion about when, what to do or what not to do based on how quickly it will end the war. And Obi-Wan going, yeah, it looks like that goal of ending the war is slipping out of sight entirely.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great Obi-Wan beard stroking.
Absolutely. And then just to back up what we're saying, if people haven't watched the episode recently, you know, we get this great scene where they're making this three-pronged attack plan in the first episode. And Palpatine's there, and he's at one point, I can't remember exactly what he says, but he kind of questions, like, are you sure about this? And then the Jedi push back, and he's like, okay, no, I won't question the strategy of the Jedi. And it really reminds you that they are constantly giving all of their battle plans to Palpatine, and he must just be, maybe there's tactics to it, maybe he has like a flower, and he's just like, this plan I'll interfere with, this plan I won't interfere with. But then we get the direct follow-up where Cody says to a grievously wounded Obi-Wan, the enemy was more than prepared for our attack, sir. They knew our every move. So the episode doesn't hit you over the head with it, but it's real clear that Palpatine would just got on the holophone with the Geonosians. Like, by the way, they're going to do this three-pronged attack.
Yeah. Again, I joke up top of how, you know, not that I missed it, but, you know, I can, again, narrow focus on these big things. But yeah, that wreck stuff, great to tie it to that of just, I'm with you. I think Palpatine, he's when do I, you know, do I lay out candy or take the candy? Like, what do I do? I got to play. It's all part of this phantom menacing that he's got going on of just like, sometimes he's probably like, you know, I'll just let Poggle defend himself and see what happens. Other times, Poggle email regarding tactics.
Yep. And it's just great to see, because it's not a thing that I have focused on a lot in my various viewings, the moments where he just directly puts his thumb on the scale of war and provides information. There's that episode early in the first season where he just tricks Padme into danger, you know? And it's, this is a great another one to see, like, no, he just straight up sold out the Jedi, and I think has a lot of faith in the Chosen One that Anakin won't die, but hopefully pain in the ass snarky Obi-Wan will. All right, we're gonna unless you have any other big picture thoughts, we're gonna take a quick break. Anything else?
No lovely big picture thoughts, but let's talk about Y-Wings.
Yeah, all right, we will be right back to talk about Y-Wings and comedy back in a moment.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you if people send you the same generic conversation starters they message everyone else? Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
We are back to finish our discussion of these two great episodes, Geonosian War of the Clone Wars. Let's talk action moments. These were some big, big action-heavy episodes. Did you have some favorite moments?
Oh, sir, did I have some favorite moments. Let me just start running through it. Now, look, I said Y-Wings. There's this one shot, man, of the Y-Wings taking off, banking into action, and it is one of those small moments that just makes me love Star Wars. Just pure action, kind of a newsreel war footagey for sure. Lucas was probably like do it like this. I love that. It just nothing against ARC-170, so I love those, the X-Wings in the future. I love just the Y-Wings, just speak to me, those clunky yet beautiful beasts lumbering into action. I love that shot.
Yeah, there's so much to pick out of that initial attempt at landing, but I think just kind of the early parts of it where it's just clearly right away it's a hellscape trying to land there. A couple things that I really like seeing is part of what I love about those Republic gunships, the LLAATs, is that the weird little bubble turret that can fire in any direction, and there's some great shots of that thing, you know, rolling around with that poor exposed, at least feeling exposed clone in there. There's a moment that is, it could risk verging on darkly comic, but to me, it really gets to the chaos in a visceral way where there's some Geonosians firing at one of the gunships, and the clone says, good thing those bugs can't aim. And that, you know, those bugs definitely gets to that feeling of troops on the ground and you know, having derogatory terms for the people you're fighting, but then immediately explodes. Immediately under like that grade of like, we're trying to build up our energy and have bravado of like, yeah, we're going to, and then it's random chaos and it's horrible. And then immediately explodes, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of that, there's Saving Private Ryan influences. There is Black Hawk Down influences in this episode. A lot of those shots, all the things you're talking about, the behind the shoulder of the Geonos and fire in it. It's again, we're just saying great. I get it. It's war, and this episode deals with the horrors of war. But just it's in terms of just filmmaking, it was fascinating to just see all that on display, especially season two. You know, the budget, I don't know, a lot of it's out of George's pocket, if I remember correctly. But you know, they're still trying to figure it all out. It isn't, you know, season seven looks, you know, different style, you know, different style of animation, but just you can tell a little more money in it, right? A little more tech, a little more they know what to do. And this season two is still early on. And there's a lot on the screen. There's a lot of money on the screen. I mean, in a good way, of just what's being presented.
Oh yeah, just the sheer scope and volume of it, of like that's horrific war. Yeah. I also just really love the design, the Geonosian starfighter. It's just mm-hmm. vicious little dagger with a bubble. It in the middle, it continues to build on the great aesthetic of the Geonosians.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other moments for you?
The LATs, the LAATs approaching Geonosian battlegrounds there, capture some of the best vibes of the Battle of Geonosis in Attack of the Clones. Some of my favorite shots for that movie. They're not like necessarily the same shots, but just the vibe is there. I love those vehicles there. And then around that same sequence there, it's just flak in Star Wars is awesome. I'm not saying it doesn't belong. There's science that, you know, this isn't magnets and bombs and all this kind of things. But it's just, it's so, I'm a big fan of the movie Memphis Belle. I think I've mentioned that before here on Force Center. But just that the flak, the old World War II bomber facing flak from the ground. I just liked it in that war film kind of way.
Yeah.
We can't be mentioning it. I like that one.
Yeah, that's a great one. Another thing I loved in this episode is just the whole Geonosian cave of horror that Kiadi Mundi says, trust me, this is where to go. And the way it immediately goes so viscerally wrong of not just that there are Geonosians in there, but that they just pick up that clone and take him to who knows what horrors up in the mm-hmm. darkness. You know, it's such a great way to illustrate that feeling mm-hmm. of we were talking about up at the top of, you know, not all tactics work the same in all places because there are different cultures, different weapons, different species. And the Geonosians, you know, have a way of fighting that just messes with the Jedi and the troopers. And just that, you know, it's thrilling and horrifying of just like, well, that trooper's gone. They just picked him up and flew away with him.
No, and I'll tell you what, it reminds me slightly of some of the stuff in any movie, you know, Game of Thrones, the Long Night or Return of the King, some of the longer battle sequences. Sometimes it's wise to kind of break them up into their own little genres. And so that one suddenly go into horror, straight horror. It worked really well for me.
Yeah, absolutely love it. And as always, I love the sound and the aesthetic of the Geonosian Sonic Blaster, that it's a different kind of weapon than just the traditional pew, pew, pew.
Oh, I love that. Great. One of those for me, I love the tossing Rex down. Here you go.
Yeah, it's so sudden and so funny. And it is partially like Anakin and Ahsoka being so on the same page that they kind of do it together. And Ahsoka says up and away. But it also is sort of like, well, this is the chaos and creativity of working with Anakin and Ahsoka. And I love that that button of Rex just saying, next time, just tell me to jump.
Isn't there, is it Commander Cody that's like a previous couple episodes of a lot of Anakin's strategies involve crashing or falling or whatever it is.
Falling,
yeah. Great. Great.
This is a sort of almost anti-action beat, but it is a gift that shows up among Obi-Wan Kenobi connoisseurs. And I always forget it's from this episode, but when right before they're rescued and Obi-Wan he's being protected by the clones, but Geonosian reinforcements are coming. He's clearly wounded, but he gets that grimace of like, I need to fight through this no matter what, and ignites his blade and tries to start standing, and then sees that the Republic reinforcements are there. It's such a great Obi-Wan shot. And just the picture of that, of like, I'm letting the clones fight for me. Uh-oh, things are turning, and no matter how much pain or how wounded I am, I got to get up and get in this.
Mm, great stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else for you?
Couple. There's a little the rolling droidica attack party is what I'm calling it. I've always loved those design of the destroyer droids. From the moment I saw them, Phantom Menace and on, that was when I would secretly love those movies more than I admit. Those are one of the I just love the design, love the sound, love the vision. And so whenever they show up, I love little sequences with them. And then final one for me actually is Barriss and Ahsoka's sacrifice is a big kind of superhero-y action moment. You know, a lot of weight, a lot of depth, a lot of tension, and well done, just well done sequence.
Yeah. Couple more from me. The flamethrowers.
Oh, yeah.
When peaceful, let's follow my intuition. Kiadi Mundi turns around and is like, bring out the flamethrowers. It's truly those moments that are like, this is both thrilling because it's safe imaginary conflict I'm watching on a screen, but it's also, you know, mm-hmm. horrifying if you spend more time with it. And then Anakin, and I believe Anakin and Ahsoka are finding him to rendezvous, and they just see burning Geonosians burst out of a cave. And like, yeah. I guess we found him. It's pretty dark. It's, you know, but, you know, thrilling as these action moments are. Go ahead.
No. Yes. Yeah. Agreement there for sure.
And then in the second episode, there's just a couple little fun, great moments. There's a lot of big explosions. But I like it whenever you see the Jedi use the Force, because I think sometimes in Clone Wars, it can get a little bit too much of the Jedi just in front blocking blasts. And I like it when we see a little bit more creative moves. There's this very fast move where Luminara picks up one of the battle droids with the Force while she's cutting down another and uses that battle droid as a shield from blasts. Which is at different points in BioShock games, once you get the ability to pick something up, always my favorite thing to do is to just pull something in front of myself and let people shoot it.
Smart.
Yeah. And then my final one is a action tension beat. But man, when Barriss and Ahsoka are making their way through the catacombs and that sleeping Geonosian just its hand flaps onto Barriss's head. That's so great.
Mm-hmm. Horror. Straight horror sequence.
Straight horror. So a ton of great actions. A job well done on the thrill and the horror being shown there. Did you have favorite moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness?
Oh, yes, I did. I do love when Luminara says to Anakin, "I love your simple logic, Skywalker."
She just straight up laughs at him.
Yeah, what is that? It's Olivia Diabo, the sister from Wonder Years, if you're in our generation.
Exactly.
Doing some great voice work there. I love that one. I love Ahsoka taking time in war to mock Anakin for ignoring her device on the wall. It's, again, they're kind of their how they survive and their relationship. Just a fun moment of just like everything going on around her, and she's got to make a great point of just like you didn't ignore my advice. I love that moment.
You remember when I pointed this out? Yeah, and I one of my favorite lines I wrote down there as well. This is another fine mess you've gotten us into, which is, you know, Ahsoka Tano directly quoting Oliver Hardy of Laurel and Hardy, which is it's just another one of those points too. There's so much in Clone Wars that. That could have come from a fan of any generation, but it's got a Lucas flavor to it of like, remember, these episodes are pulling, you know, not just from Kurosawa and Leone. They're pulling from all sorts of different kinds of entertainment from the 30s to the 50s. And you see these little moments of homage to specific comedians. And I mean, that is just that was his line. You know, this is another fine mess you've gotten us into. You know, if Ahsoka had a little bowler hat, she could have smashed it in frustration and went,
I love that you said that. I had three VHS tapes of the best of Laurel and Hardy growing up. I don't know how, why it was ended up in my parents' collection, but I used to watch them all the time on Saturday mornings. And yeah, that's great. Love that you pulled that.
I absolutely love Laurel and Hardy. So that was really great to hear Ahsoka quoting Hardy. Other fun moments for you?
Two more that I wrote down here. I do love, because I do love Poggle the Lesser. It's something I've always just, the name is so unique and silly to me in that Star Wars way that I've just always over the years become obsessed with him. I love that Poggle goes out to the fight with his cane and kind of like he's got a tire iron. He's not going to be in the fight. He actually walks away from the fight. But at one point they cut to him and he's in front. He's in the front, just kind of saying his Poggle words, and he has a cane. He's just kind of like, why I oughta. I just thought that was a funny, weird moment.
He does a little tap like a cop in a Mack Sennett movie, right? Like with their billy club, like well,
It reminded me of like Anchorman and all the anchors getting in that street fight. He's just like, what are you doing here? And then he walks away. He's not going to be there for the fight. But.
It is a little bit like Poggle the Lesser just walks out there and kind of just like, I want you to know it's me that's about to do this to you. Bye.
Oh, I love that. And then a final one for me to submit. I do love Obi-Wan talking about the last time he was here. He was chained up and, you know, creatures tried to eat him or kill him. And Commander Cody says, that sounds entertaining, which I was like, is this like a meta commentary on that movie?
Yeah, I really like just the sort of canonicity of like, yeah, remember, like we as fans could be like, yeah, it's the planet from Attack of the Clones. Like, you remember the characters went through some stuff there too that they might remember in that. Yeah, that full exchange. So good. Last time I was chained to a pole and attacked by several humongous monsters. which to me is really funny because, like, yeah, the arena scene from Geonosis, but, you know, just processing it from Obi-Wan Kenobi's perspective, that's exactly what happened to him, and not a fond memory, I'm sure. And then the follow-up of, that sounds entertaining. And then such a great Obi-Wan line. It was for the Geonosians. Because it actually was a form of entertainment in their horrific Petronaki arena. So great.
Yeah.
A couple for me. I definitely had that one. Very early in the first episode, when Palpatine is kind of questioning the Jedi strategy and then goes, oh, I'll leave it to you. Obi-Wan says, our thanks, Chancellor, in a very snarky tone, which is a great reminder that, you know, those two don't like each other. You know, Obi-Wan doesn't yet realize that they are in a secret battle for the soul of Anakin Skywalker, but they also just, they don't like each other.
It's really
fun. You brought up that great Luminara line, Anakin saying, as long as we can destroy them faster than they can make them, and laughing. I love your simple logic, Skywalker. It's so condescending. Last one for me, because we like to track some of the battle droid pain. These are the two battle droids in the tank, in the super tank. One says, our shields are holding, they can't touch us. Another battle droid says, that's a relief.
The continuing story. I do love it's a weird moment. It's funny, but it's weird. When the strategy droid, who I consider, you know, the smarter of the droids, is just standing by that tank with a bomb by his head going, ha, 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 and he blows up. Like, what are you, idiot?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that almost reads to me as yet another sort of criticism of rigidity versus improvisation, because he can't imagine that Ahsoka didn't throw it there to blow up the tank. Because he's saying the super tank is impervious and then it explodes on him. Of like, well,
yeah,
maybe if you've been looking at the big picture, tactical droid.
loved it.
Yeah. Great stuff. Great stuff. All right, let's move on then to some moments of canon or lore or connections to other stories. I didn't think there were as many just sort of like little details or winks or nods myself, but I did a little deep dive on reminding myself of exactly kind of where Luminara and Barriss is going, because, you know, I know the big picture, but I did some double check-in, and I thought that might be fun to discuss what kind of seeds we think are planted for where they're going.
Definitely think it's there. Plus the, you know, the Ahsoka and Barriss meeting, you know, literally the handshake moment here and where that goes. So yeah, definitely there.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to ask you just about Luminara's future as a Jedi. We all, I guess future and past. So there's that episode earlier in the previous season where Luminara is again being kind of wise but rigid, where she is trying to handle Asajj Ventress being loose on a Republic ship, and Ahsoka is trying to say, you need help. Ventress doesn't fight fair. She's dangerous. And Luminara says, no, you stay here. Ahsoka breaks the rules and saves Luminara's life. So it seems like Luminara should be aware that sometimes when Ahsoka bends the rules, it is coming from a place of wisdom, even though she's a Padawan. And then, you know, lots of stuff happened with Luminara, but in particular, I think the thing that's made it really interesting to go back to these episodes is the description by the Martez sisters of this Jedi in with green skin and dark robes. I think all of us have kind of thought is Luminara and Unduli. If you don't mind, I'm going to just read this paragraph I took from Wikipedia that refreshed me on those exact details. So the Jedi are... This is a part of an episode that, you know, we know the events, but I don't think we exactly saw this. We'll get to that when we get to that episode. The Jedi are chasing Zero the Hutt as Zero is trying to escape. So this paragraph reads, the Jedi diverted the transport away from a populated landing platform, but in doing so accidentally caused it to crash into the home of the Martez family instead. Rafa and her sister were saved by their parents. Unfortunately, their parents were killed when the transport crashed. Afterwards, a female Jedi with green skin and dark robes visited Rafa and Trace, but instead of attempting to help the orphan sisters, she told them that she needed to make a choice about the transport and that they shouldn't worry, for the Force would be with them. The Jedi then departed, leaving Rafa and Trace, who had once regarded the Jedi as heroes, disillusioned and embittered against the Order. Do you see seeds of that in this episode?
100%. I'm so glad we're talking about it now and talked about it earlier in the episode of just where Barriss ends up, where her view of the Jedi Order, the constraints and things that they've done or not done. And that's an example. I remember during season 7, you and I breaking it down, I just kind of being really upset with Luminar in a way, which is not to say that any of the actions taken were just entirely wrong. They are tough choices unless you've been there. Maybe you don't know how you'd make those choices, but it's the follow-up. It's that Star Wars theme of things happen, but and some of them are natural or some of them can't be avoided, but it's what you do after. And those are the unintended consequences on a small scale. So the fall of the Jedi Order to me is brick by brick from the inside. And that's one of it where now you've affected you know, again, maybe you could not have affected the moment any differently or done anything differently. But her parents are gone. Their parents are gone, excuse me. And then you don't, that's it. And you just kind of follow your manual. The Force will be with you always. Great. How do we survive? And now those two people don't trust you. And the Jedi Order loses trust bit by bit by bit because holding to a playbook. And I don't fault the playbook. I don't fault the Order. I don't fault the lessons and their approach. And I respect the chaos of the moment and what had to happen in your eyes. But what do you do after? And you see that here in this episode with Luminara. I mean, great stuff, powerful lessons to Anakin, if Anakin could listen, about letting go and everything. But also, you know, that Anakin kind of proves, like you said, that you can go forward. You can choose to do something different in this moment. It maybe hurts him later on. False victory, like I said early. Anyways, kind of rambling, but I get it all. It's there. And she's a perhaps an example of the tragedy, the true tragedy of the Jedi fall. It came from within and it came moment by moment.
I think that's a really great way to describe it of that. Yeah. Palpatine manipulated them, but he manipulated them into doing some dismantling from inside. Right.
Yeah.
And then maybe you could have a discussion about, you know, is this the stress of war? Is this, you know, anything like that? But yeah. For me, what this is about is it's a sort of object lesson in wisdom needs compassion as a companion, right?
Yeah.
Because even if Luminara has this very heightened Jedi philosophical that transport was going to crash, it was going to crash one of two places. I accept that I can only control so much, and what I could control is taking it away from the more populated area. And you know, the Force will guide us. The Force will help you accept the loss. The Force will help you move forward. It's all beautiful wisdom, but it doesn't help Roth and Trace without having compassion along the way, without coming, as you're saying, afterwards and saying, you know, I'm so sorry, I know how you must feel, let me help you through it, you know. And even on the practical end, what can we do to help you, right?
Yeah.
Literally, physically, what can we do to help you?
Yeah.
And it just seems like Luminara has a real failure of compassion at different moments in her career as a Jedi.
Yeah, I mean, I have a real world example of a large scale fight we were all involved in trying to stop. Real dangerous thing going on, and we're all rushing to get the fight, and one of our guys knocks out a 10-year-old kid who was in the way watching the fight. Knocks him out, like boom, like a boxer, just down. And you know, other than puts you in a liable position, but what do you do after at that point? More than just you know, get up, kid, sorry about that, but like, how do you deal with that? How to communicate that and with an angry, confused mother and a kid who doesn't know what's going on? Like, I've been in that situation. That's why I was always a little upset in a good way of Luminara. Just like, I get what got you there, but you going forward hurt your cause and hurt your efforts. And that's what I ramble on it, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, that story is so haunting. And I think so, a painful, good, real world connection to this. But I think I see the seeds of that wisdom without compassion in this episode where, like we've said at the top, I think everything that she is saying is good, solid Jedi philosophy about being able to let go. And we know in later times, Anakin's not going to be able to let go, and his good love and trust and loyalty to Ahsoka and everybody else is going to curdle into fear of losing them rather than, you know, love for them. So she's entirely right to be concerned about those dangers. But then she herself is just, it feels like she would have a better relationship with Barriss if she had more compassion. And you get that feeling of that. Yeah, she's not just, you know, and Luminara gets a little defensive, like, I'm not just giving up, you know, but I'm ready to let her go if I have to. But there's just that little bit of like, okay, would Luminara have walked away sooner than she should have because she was too ready to embrace the wisdom?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like we talk about a lot, sometimes no clear answer.
Yep.
Sometimes just strong hunches or directions of choice or deep philosophical questions. And it's to me, it's very clear going into season seven, looking at season seven to kind of suggest strongly that it's Luminara. And then to go back and look at these episodes and to look what goes on with Barriss later on, big points behind it, like big purpose behind those choices.
Yeah, yeah. In the next arc, we'll have some more quality time with Barriss, but I did refresh myself on exactly what she says. Spoilers for people who have not watched the full arc, but Barriss ends up being disillusioned with the Jedi, and in order to get their culpability in the war kind of exposed, she does some horrible things. She plants in a convoluted way a bomb at the Jedi temple and then frames Ahsoka for it and is kind of instigates the situation in which Ahsoka leaves. And I pulled this quote. This is what Barriss Offee says to the court after Anakin catches her about why she did it. She says, "I did it because I've come to realize what many people in the Republic have come to realize, that the Jedi are the ones responsible for this war, that we've so lost our way, that we have become villains in this conflict, that we are the ones that should be put on trial, all of us. And my attack on the temple was an attack on what the Jedi have become, an army fighting for the dark side, fallen from the light that we once held so dear. This Republic is failing. It's only a matter of time."
Mm.
So much like with Luminara, do you see the seeds of that in this this episode that we're discussing?
From the moment she walks up, that's there. From the moment she walks up and again, you hear that statement and it can be one of those really maybe, I don't know, complicated, convoluted situations where you hear her words and you go, maybe not wrong. What you did with that is wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, again, so you can dig in and dig in and dig in. But yeah, for the moment she comes up, because it's all played for laughs a little bit. And look, I'm sometimes a quiet and reserved person. I follow the rules. You know, when my friends scream too loud in an office, I worry about the office next to us. You know, like that's me. Like, timid at times. And so Barriss comes up and she is very proper, the bow and everything, and the great look of Ahsoka, kind of like and Anakin kind of smiling, and it's a fun moment, but. You can just start to see the seeds of just like the box, the frame is around her, and she wants to break out of it and cuts that perfect rectangle for a reason. So,
yeah. I mean, obviously, in terms of what she did, I think this is great. As you're saying, it's complex because a lot of these criticisms that she's bringing up are things that in the story of Star Wars have some amount of validity of that the Jedi have contributed to this war and that they've lost their way and all that. But obviously handling that by planting explosives and framing her friend is not the best way to deal with those things.
Yes. But yes. Let me be clear. I condone the actions of Barriss Offee.
Motivations, understandable.
Actions. Sorry. I should say 100% correct. I do not condone the action.
Do not condone. But I love just looking at Barriss. I think for Luminara, some of this stuff is much more about like what happens when a Jedi is very confident in their wisdom and kind of can't see that other people need more than just that wisdom. For Barriss, I just see like the really human perspective of, you know, not only is she probably, observing all of these things and coming to these opinions, and we got more Barriss storytelling coming, but just from that very human perspective of my master is kind of cold and rigid and makes me memorize things and is really firm with me. And then I see Anakin and Ahsoka having this caring, loving relationship. And here my master is going like, memorize these catacombs, crawl in there. You might die, but hey, You know, Barriss went through, I think, some like true trauma and fear in this episode, you know?
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. So great stuff there. A couple other canon lore connections. I love that we see after they throw Rex, Anakin and Ahsoka catch their own selves falling, which is what Bell Zedifar is trying to learn in Light of the Jedi.
Right.
Yeah. So it all connects. It all connects. We saw Boyle and Waxer again, and those are the troopers in that Ryloth arc who bonded with Numa, the Twi'lek. So that was nice to see them up in action again. And then the final, there wasn't for me as much canon stuff. Anakin and Rex both quote Jar Jar in my mind when they tell troops, steady, steady.
I wrote that down too, man. We're thinking of like justice for Jar Jar. Everybody steady, steady.
He's the one who came up with that. No one else ever said that before Jar Jar Binks. Any other canon lore connections? Anything you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, definitely the steady one there. I love that. Anakin loves fighting droids on bridges. We've seen that a ton, and I love it. That's his go-to. It's like me and a veggie wrap burrito at Del Taco. I'm going to get that every time, and you know it. Anakin's going to fight droids on bridges.
You're going to eat it on a bridge. I want to see you eat a Del Taco in a high place.
Usually in a car before I get home. The final one for me, I love the art on the gunships is always fun all through the Clone Wars. But you got the Nexu on Kenobi's gunship with the name Bad Kitty, which, full disclosure, looked it up, was the original kind of concept name for the Nexu when it was being designed. So I love that.
Yeah, I thought that was an Exu. I didn't have time to look it up, so I'm so glad that you can confirm that. And I love that that's the gunship he gets on when it's like, yeah, no, the last time I was there, I was tied to a pole and attacked by humongous monsters. Like the one you've painted on the side of this ship.
Bad kitty.
Bad kitty. Was there anything in these two episodes that you disliked or questioned?
There's one thing. It's in story, all right? It's in story. Ki-Adi Mundi talks about the war starting at 0700 hours at 7 a.m. And that, for me, is too early for the start of war. Move that up.
Come on, Ki-Adi. Some of us don't have two brains to wake ourselves up that early in the morning. Yeah, for me, this is just a slight question / observation. The Clone Wars, we talk about a lot, particularly in comparison to like Rebels. The violence is not, you know, it's not hidden. People die, people scream, blow up, all that. And there's something about the Geonosians, including in Attack of the Clones, that I think because they are, you know, these kind of weird insect aliens, there's just like a lot more graphic, right? There's a lot of just like slice them in half.
Yeah.
Both in Attack of the Clones and then again in this arc that I don't think you would see as much like just like, oh, yeah, no, that's it's a Twi'lek, and starting at the head and then going down diagonally, the Jedi cut him in half. Like, you know, there's something about that that is always interesting to me of, like, because they're, you know, these weird insect creatures, the violence is just always a little bit more graphic.
There's a lot of that in these episodes, and what does it say about us and our view of bugs?
Yeah, so, that's the only thing for me. Otherwise, these episodes were such great, like we said, thrill of war, but also really talking about how do these characters process it? How do they get through it? How do they, you know, deal with this chaos, find order in it? How do they gather strength from one another without being paralyzed by the fear of losing one another? Good stuff. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
And actually, I could take a screenshot, so anyone wants to, I have this already written down, not based on what Joseph just was saying about the Geonosians, but I really think, and just when you go back either to Attack of the Clones or even some of the levels on Battlefront 2 or reading about more about Poggle and Catalyss, I got to say, and the comics and Rebels and what happened to them, the Geonosians to me are one of the more interesting and unique societies in Star Wars. And yes, you're right, and you're often framed as bad guys, and there is a loyalty to Dooku that's even addressed in this episode.
Yeah.
And it's just fascinating. I don't have anything more beyond that, but just seeing the catacombs and the way they are, the designs, and also their intelligence for being the go-to for designers for a lot of this. And the battle droids kind of being built in their image in a way, going back to Phantom Menace. I just want to highlight the Geonosians for what it's worth. And it's interesting that you brought up what you did. I did think that a lot of just, man, they're just getting sliced in two. Understandable. It's war. I know a lot of people, I'm not super crazy about bugs either. So maybe again, seriously, maybe something we view, but I don't know. I just love it. And it's tragic what happens to them as a society, as a race, as a civilization. Another, a bad notch on the Empire's list of horrible actions. But interesting. And I love oddly enough, spending time on Geonosia.
Spending time on Geonosis with Geonosians. It's a tongue twister. Yep. And yeah, we're going to get to do that next time. We're going to get to dive into even more of their culture, which clearly people like because it does come back in Rebels. It's in comic books. You know, it's all over the place as it should be because it is fascinating. That was the only other thing that I had written down that you mentioned. I like that weird exchange of like the Geonosians are very loyal to Dooku. And then Ki-Adi-Mundi says that's an overlooked fact. Ki-Adi-Mundi, the master of overlooked facts. That just made me want to see, like, how does that play out? Geonosians just, why do they like Dooku so much? You know, is that meant to be like a political thing of like the Geonosians are very loyal to Dooku because he has this great relationship with Poggle the Lesser? Or is it more that they're just like, God, he's so cool with the cape?
Yeah.
Do they just think he's awesome, you know?
Maybe Dooku treats them well, and that's all it took. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I just I have almost these like Muppet Show flashes of like tall Dooku hanging out with all of these like little short Geonosians, and they're all just having a great time.
It's just like the John Denver Muppets Christmas episode. It's totally like
exactly.
That. Charles Grodin and Muppets. Great Muppet Crusade.
If you could have a figure of any character from these episodes, who would you want?
I don't normally collect troopers in army build, but the Ki-Adi-Mundi clone troopers, the ones around them, the design and kind of the darker beige helmets, some yellow on them. I really love that design. So I'd take some of those and super tanks.
Yeah. There's some great, great, clone trooper, various armor designs. Absolutely. For myself, this would maybe be a two pack, I want that sleepy Geonosian who slapped their hand on Paris's forehead. I would take a sleepy Geonosian. I'd maybe just need to add to my collection a Geonosian because I do love them so much. And then because I am slowly but surely collecting all of the oddest Obi-Wan action figures, all the most specific, I would love this very specifically injured Obi-Wan, dirty with cuts on his cheek and holding his side. Poor injured Obi-Wan.
Love that. Arm sling Obi-Wan.
Arm sling Obi-Wan. So we're very excited, obviously, to discuss these episodes, but we're perhaps even more excited to go into Star Wars Venture into absolute horror in our next two episodes. We're going to be talking about Season 2, Episode 7, Legacy of Terror. Season 2, Episode 8, Brain Invaders. Hey, you remember how we sometimes go on about how Star Wars is not just all the deep philosophy, it is absolute pulp adventure serial? One of these episodes is called Brain Invaders, and I can't wait to discuss it. Ken, what do you think the moral of this episode of our podcast should be?
I wrote this down here. A podcast, therefore broadcasting, is a combination of exhaustive prep and the willingness to let it all go.
I think that is great. And you want to tell people where they can find us?
We'd love to. You can follow us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. Like our Facebook page at Force Center Podcast. You can get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. And you can get our merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. Once you get a Speculate Responsibly t-shirt just in time for the new Disney Plus shows as news starts to come out about them. You can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. We appreciate your support, and that can get you into our wonderful Marvel Star Wars community on Discord, a private community for the Force Center supporters. So check that out. You can follow me at KedNapsock or go to my website, KedNapsock.com, or over to the GPA.fun, where I'm working on that production company, a digital brand and Empire Fun over there with Josh Mark and a bunch of wonderful folks.
That is great. Yeah, check all those things out. You can find me Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. You can follow all my other comedy adventures at my website, josephscrimshaw.com, including a show I'm doing this very weekend on Valentine's Day with my friends, The Double Clicks. If you want to find out more info about that comedy variety show, you can, like I said, go to josephscrimshaw.com, and there is a link right there on the main front homepage. I know how to say internet things. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Kiadi Mundi, this has been Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.